I'm Dean K, backstage at Bonnaroo with the Punch Brothers. We've got the whole gang here today. Chris, both Chris's, Gnome, Paul, and Gabe. Welcome to Bonnaroo.
Hey,
thank you so much for having us.
And I must also thank you for dressing up for the radio interview. I mean, you look all very dapper today.
It actually has a pronounced effect on one's speaking voice to make sure, yeah. Look good, sound good.
Yeah, Paul's bow tie is tight enough that he won't be speaking today, if that's what you're referring to.
That's true, so. But his silence will be golden. That was Paul Coward, ladies and gentlemen.
As he took the microphone and said nothing. Of course, the humidity might have a downside with the clothing you're wearing today here at Bonner. It's a little warm, a little humid.
Yeah, we'll see how long it lasts.
This is bluegrass, but not bluegrass. How would you describe what's happening musically with the Punch Brothers?
that's not bad. It looks like bluegrass. It doesn't sound like it very often. It sounds like it sometimes.
Sometimes.
But yeah, that's the texture that we grew up utilizing and sort of felt like we needed to continue utilizing because it's what we know. It's what we know best. These five instruments are something we feel at least more capable of wielding than another group of five instruments. But it really doesn't have much bearing on what we decide to tackle creatively. It's just the tools. It's one must focus on the house.
Do you think people audience
not house music,
but
the house. Sorry.
Do you find that there's expectations from your fans and from artists or from your audience that you might disappoint them in some ways by not providing bluegrass music?
I think our audience at this point knows what we're about. I think if someone wasn't familiar with our music and saw a picture of us and just assumed that we were a bluegrass band because you see banjos and fiddles, if someone is a diehard traditional bluegrass fan and they want bluegrass to sound like it sounded in 1946, they would be disappointed, because that's not what we do. But and there may have been early on when we first started playing a few people who thought, oh, maybe this is a new bluegrass band post Nickel Creek, that Chris Thiele was interested in playing more traditional music, and we're far from that.
I think ultimately to people who are very familiar with bluegrass, we don't sound like bluegrass, and to people that aren't, we do a little bit. Mm-hmm. They just go, yeah, oh, banjo and that kind of thing. Yeah, that's bluegrass. Yeah, and hear it. Yeah, checks out, bluegrass. But for people who are very familiar, it's not really that. They get a little bristly sometimes if you call it bluegrass, and it's not.
That's what I was wondering, if some of the more purists might have an issue with what you're doing.
I think only insofar as they feel that we call it bluegrass, which we don't.
Yeah, right.
So I think we're keeping them their rage at bay.
I just saw you perform in the other room. You're doing it kind of a grand old Opry style with all of you circling a couple of microphones and leaning in to play when you were singing and pulling away when you were playing quieter, very dynamic. I can imagine this makes for an easy setup for when you're in the recording studio or when you're doing these kinds of backstage interviews, and probably getting a more true representation of what the sound of the band is. Is it a little scary though, working that way? You can't fix it. You're working without a net.
Not really. From the conception of this band, we've always strove to be able to do that. The very first record we made, "How to Grow a Woman from the Ground," we did around two microphones. Completely, and that was kind of our goal. Is if we can make it sound good enough to where you can just stick a microphone in a room and we play it, then we know that we'll be able to kind of survive under any circumstance.
It's kind of liberating, actually. Yeah, you can just sit down and start playing. The setup in there took 5 minutes.
And we're really comfortable being close to each other, and especially for the singers, when you're singing harmony, having to be 5 feet across the room from someone or across the stage is not ideal. And so we're able to get right next to each other and hear each other acoustically on the instruments and the vocals, and it's actually the easiest way for us to do it.
Yeah, on stage it won't be quite as easy.
I was going to ask. When you're playing at Bonnaroo on the big festival stage with all those people out there, you're not just crouching around two microphones. They're going to have to set you up.
Suicide. That would, yes, that would lead to suicide.
Have you tried that before live?
We have, and it nearly ended in, yes.
In tears.
In tears, at least, yes. Tears.
Fatal tears.
Fatal tears. Tears of death. Tears of death. Sorry.
I think we have a song in the works.
Yeah.
Working on
that's
it.
That's good.
What exactly is
Paul Cohort, ladies and gentlemen?
What exactly is anti-phogmatic?
An anti-phogmatic is it's an old term that we dug out. Actually, that Noam's brother Moti dug up at a whiskey tasting. Yes.
Or through Google, yeah.
One or the other. Yeah. You know, the first is a little more romantic, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so, whiskey tasting. And they were going through various old terms, and an anti-phogmatic apparently is a bracing beverage that you would have in the morning. A standard bracer is something that typically just sort of repairs the ills that you did to yourself the night before, whereas an anti-phogmatic does that, but in addition to that, it prepares you for the ills that you might be facing that day, and particularly the weather. If the weather outside is frightful, then the
will go a long way.
Little anti-phogmatic will
it's a perfect thing before your morning commute.
Oh,
just a little drink, you know. Mass transit, though.
Mass transit.
We're not condoning anti-phogmatic and driving.
No. Only if you're taking the train. Be careful if you drive or if you're on the back of a horse.
In a way, it's kind of a hair of the dog, right?
Exactly.
Hair of the dog, but also a pick-me-up.
Restorative.
Yeah. Restorative.
The band was originally called How to Grow a Band. Why the name change?
That was a temporary name while Critter... While Critter finished various Crittery exploits.
Yeah. We had made a record that was called How to Grow a Woman from the Ground.
Yeah.
Under a different band name, the band name of just Chris Thiele. And then when we wanted to tour that record to promote it, we thought it was just going to be, you know, a couple 2-week tours here and there. And so we called it Chris Thiele and the How to Grow a Band. And then we realized this needs to keep happening. And the band couldn't be called something just based off of one record, so we started brainstorming something new.
The new record is called Anti-Phogmatic, produced with John Bryan.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
Who's known for his work with pop and rock artists like Amy Mann and Fiona Apple, Robin Hitchcock, Spoon. Not a lot of classical bluegrass. Why did you pick him to work with?
Well, John's a buddy from way back. Gabbers and I have known him for probably 7-8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean... We always have wanted to make a record with him. Yeah. He's a perfect guy. He's so omnivorous musically, which, you know, we feel is we would like to consider ourselves also musical omnivores. But it seemed like the right idea. So it was just a matter of convincing him to do it, which took several months.
But he did.
Yeah, it was so much fun. You talk about the ease of setting up. A studio for these instruments, you know, given the way we played, it took us 2 days to get to get
all the mics set up
before we recorded a note with that man. He's just mad scientist in the middle trying to get. I mean, we're so thrilled with the results, but it was the first time we felt like what was coming out of the speakers, you know, the little two-dimensional world of paper there, that was representing the way it sounds, to like just kind of plop yourself in the middle of us. He's brilliant. It was a really amazing experience.
It's the first time the Punch Brothers are going to be performing at Bonnaroo. How do you think it's going to go over in a festival setting?
I'm really, really well.
It's going to go awesome, man. It's going to be...
I don't know if it's possible to move a set from that tent to the main stage mid-set. But
that's
you
probably
know,
what's going
to
happen, yeah.
Not to raise expectations too high, but if there's, you know...
Yeah.
The possibility of relocating mid-song to the main stage, you know, these are acoustic instruments.
Pied Piper style over the main stage. Folks, do you really like the Punch Brothers?
I think we're really psyched to be here. We've been wanting to play here for a long time. And
yeah.
I'm Dean Kay, backstage at Bonnaroo with the Punch Brothers, the musical omnivores. Thanks for stopping by.